So I brought my pad of paper up here. This is hopefully going to be kind of an interactive session. So is anyone from a state that expanded Medicaid? Yes, great. So I titled this Challenges because I wanted to talk about what we're doing in Denver and get some suggestions from everyone. And I guess I would say go easy on me. I was cautioned about submitting this to this conference because we are doing our best to monitor the uninsured population as best we can in Denver, and as a result, we are doing some creative mathematics to do so, and I'm here today to show you what we're doing and get your thoughts and actually get some ideas on anyone who's got any suggestions about anything we haven't thought of. So I'll go through a quick background and context, talk about the problem, our solution approach, some of the results we've gotten, and conclusions. So Denver, the city and county of Denver, has a population of about 600,000. One of the big challenges we have that's very important and relevant to this talk is the fact in the first 4 or 5 years, actually in the 2013 ACS count, we have grown by 10%. So we think we're closer to 649,000 now, and we are attracting young invincibles who come to ski, and so people who are prime targets for the Affordable Care Act. We have about 60% white and 32% Hispanic, and we have about 20% in poverty. And what is usually also on this slide is we think, or we thought, and now we're pretty sure, that we had about 20% uninsured, which is about 100,000 folks. So in thinking about some of the other places that have expanded Medicaid, we have a pretty sizable intervention population. You know, Massachusetts was over 90% when they expanded Medicaid, and so we've got a lot of people. We had a big job to do. In Denver, the public health department is part of the large safety net hospital. It's a big integrated care organization. So though the hospital's name does not appear in the name of my department, we are very much connected to all of their data, so that's helpful. But that's really relevant to this talk because there was a strong, I would even say immense vested interest in understanding these uninsured folks, who they were, where they lived, how many there were, because we were the people paying for and not being paid for their care. The other reason that this was really important to do is because in Denver we do community health assessment and community health improvement planning, and the community in 2014 selected two priority areas. One was healthy eating, active living, and one was access to care. So the first marching orders for the access to care group was to implement the Medicaid expansion. So what's the problem? Why is this so hard? Colorado did implement a Medicaid expansion, and we built our own healthcare exchange for the January 1st, 2014 go-live of ACA. So new coverage options exist for a number of these uninsured individuals, and many efforts are underway to enroll them. They were then, and they continue to be now. Along those lines are traditional enrollment mechanisms that have been set up to enroll people who are undocumented in emergency Medicaid and pregnant mothers into Medicaid. Didn't really scale very well to the task at hand, to getting quite a few people enrolled in Medicaid. So additional information was required to inform the enrollment efforts. And so this is the pet project of our health department director. His name is Bill. He asks a lot of questions. He's a doc, but seems to sure have an interest in epidemiology and in data, and so he makes a lot of requests, and usually ones I can't fulfill. So he was very insistent that despite my concerns about all the ways he suggested to measure the Medicaid population, that we try and do it anyway. So the important questions that Bill wanted me to answer were how many individuals were and remain uninsured, who were and are they in terms of demographics, where did and do they continue to live, how many individuals have been successfully enrolled, and what coverage were they eligible for? Were they eligible for Medicaid, which was up to 133 or 138, some weird wiggle room there? Were they eligible for the exchange, which is everyone else basically, except for this uninsurable population, which is really important for us to talk about. I know there's some variation between states about Medicaid expansions, but we think about 10 to 20,000 people in Denver will remain totally uninsurable in any way, and that's people who have immigrated to the country in the last 5 years, people who are undocumented, And there's some strange loophole about people who are on parole. So we also have a lot of questions about this correction population also. It's one of our targets. So our solution approach was to do our best and to use annual survey data to estimate county uninsured counts and demographic breakdowns. And this is the American Community Survey. We were going to use aggregated survey data to assess geographic patterns in uninsured by census tract, because what our health department director really wanted to give to community partners was a neighborhood density map of uninsured. We were going to use enrollment and caseload data to monitor Medicaid enrollment and to use annual exchange estimates and institutional surveys to measure exchange enrollment. And so I included institutional surveys but won't really talk much about it. We were fortunate that Kaiser Permanente, who was the main winner of our exchange population after the first open enrollment season, decided to do a new member survey that said, were you uninsured before you joined us? So this is the basic equation for how we have estimated our uninsured population. You take survey respondents who report no insurance. You take the number of eligible survey responses, you weight it, and then you apply it to a county population counter estimate to get the estimated number of uninsured individuals. So there are a number of problems with each step in this process for the need for real-time public health data on uninsured. Lauren, I'll send you these slides. You don't need to take a picture. So in terms of how many uninsured, so as I talked about earlier, we've used the American Community Survey for a number of these estimations, and we're fortunate in Colorado that the Colorado Trust, which is a large foundation, pays for a survey called the Colorado Health Access Survey. There's a lot of interest in mental health, and that survey is focused on mental health stigma and access to care, specifically different types of care, access to behavioral care, access to oral health care, and choices people make about their care based on their access and their coverage. So it asks about underinsured, which is an important topic. Oh yeah, one more thing here. So the far right column, which I would draw your attention to here, shows the problems with the denominator. So our denominator has fluctuated over time by 50,000 people. Which is a real challenge for us, because that results in substantial variation in the estimate number of uninsured individuals. We also have a really hard time counting and discerning who's insurable and who's uninsurable. I'm sure it comes as no surprise, but it's very hard to survey people by phone who are on parole, who have recently moved to Denver, or who are Spanish-speaking immigrants who are undocumented. So this number also moves around quite a bit. I didn't even add percentages, because who knows what that actual number really is. In terms of the uninsured estimates, they range across the two surveys in over 3 years from 104,000 to 116,000. That may not seem like a very big deal, but one of the reasons that's really challenging is our public health group and our work with community partners is heavily based on setting targets and benchmarking. And so we were really unsure about, should we say we're going to enroll 40,000? Should we going to say we're going to enroll 50,000? Should we say we're going to get access up to 94%? How are we going to monitor that? And that's really what the main finding of this is that the messaging is actually, as it turns out, way more important than the difference between 18.4 and 18.2. One thing we did do that was really helpful was we used the ACS survey data to produce demographic profiles of the uninsured population. So this is of the 104,000 that are uninsured, and this was a report that was done on the 2011 ACS survey, that 16% were from 50 to 64 years of age. One thing that we also did, although it made me a little uncomfortable to do, was to take this estimate and say 16% means 20,000 people, and we know that there's 60,000 people in this demographic group, so we can pretty confidently say that we think 25% of Hispanics or 18 to 24 year olds are uninsured. But then you can see that's when we're really starting to move across multiple different data sources to produce estimates. So in terms of where they live, the map on the left is from the Colorado Health Access Survey, which is a much smaller sample than the ACS survey. And we're fortunate in Denver that we're a large enough county that we are our own health statistics region, but the level of analysis here is done at health statistics region. So for every other county in Denver, there wasn't even a county level estimate on uninsured. However, we were able to use the 5-year ACS data set to produce census tract level estimates. And as I suspect most people are thinking, the problem you run into is that the moment we pass January 1st, 2014, you can't roll those years together anymore because there's a big thing that happened then. So that could feasibly mean we couldn't have an accurate census tract level or neighborhood map until the 2019 survey is completed and comes out in the fall of 2020. So that's a bit of a distance to wait. In terms of trying to assess what we think the uninsured population was eligible for, we did an analysis using their income and their insurance status and some projections that we have from the other survey, the Colorado Health Access Survey, on documentation status. So in using these two, and this is the 2011 data again, you would think that these 19,729 would be the uninsurable population. These are folks that you could expect would remain on indigent care programs and any sort of discount program you have. We have one at the hospital that's called DFAP, the Denver Financial Assistance Program, and it's just a sliding scale coverage system so that they don't pay such a high rate. It's negotiated for the hospital. This 41,000 is the group that you would expect would be enrolled in Medicaid. And these two groups would be eligible for the exchange plans, and the 34,000 there would be eligible for the federal subsidy. And one thing that's been interesting is I can tell you that we have had, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of 55 or 60,000 Medicaid enrollments, which means that my estimates are really low and has been hard to explain, especially at the census tract level when we have, you know, we thought there were 100 people eligible for Medicaid, and we have 300 Medicaid enrollments in that census tract. And that is definitely something that is happening in Denver. We don't really have a great answer for that. So some of the survey challenges is that, as we all know, they're just not frequent enough for the type of analysis we want to do, and especially waiting for this first, like, post-ACA number to come out, you know, just the wait is endless. The sampling methodology and sample size, especially for cell phones, isn't adequate for any sort of sub-county level analysis. And for a local health department that's working on a city that has a high, like a big uninsured problem, this is a real challenge for us. There are challenges to sampling new Denverites in disparate populations, and we have inconsistencies in survey language. One of the real problems we have is that, you know, if you call someone and you say, hi, you know, do you have insurance status right now? They say, yes, I go to Denver Health, which is the name of the hospital I work at, but it's not insurance. Or they have indigent care insurance, which is called CICP in Colorado, which they think is insurance, which feels to them like insurance, but no one actually gets paid on that. And so we group those with self-pay and uninsured, but really asking a survey administrator to split those hairs is just not feasible. And so there, I think one of the important takeaways is the next frontier is really improving literacy around healthcare coverage and what insurance means and how you consume healthcare appropriately. And then the multi-year aggregation that crosses January 1st, 2014 is a real problem. In terms of the population challenges, as I said, we have had a pretty substantial growth. We're not really sure what to do about that. It plagues a number of our indicators across access to care, chronic disease, infectious disease, you name it. The economic climate, when you think about that multi-year aggregate, which is 2008 to 2012 or 2009 to 2013, what that really is pooled repeated cross-sections of surveys for people. And there's that CHAZ survey that I spoke about earlier, I looked it up last night, and they said that among the lower-income folks, 50% of adults responded that in that past year, the person who had insurance had lost their job or they had switched coverage at least once. So that means that there's a lot of variability that is unappreciated by that multi-year data set. And then at the same time, if we all think about what happened between 08 and 12, a lot happened in the economy. A lot of people lost jobs, then they got jobs, then they lost jobs again. And so in thinking about the accuracy of that estimate, that's very concerning. The other broad overarching challenge is the transient and inconsistent nature of the safety net population. They move a lot. They change phones a lot. They switch insurance a lot. They have a lot of challenges to maintaining consistent income. And for those reasons, this is probably the biggest concern that I have, is that these are the hardest group to measure. And then again, the lack of understanding around insurance coverage. I know this is sort of a global problem, but especially in Denver, this is very hard because Denver has worked hard to prioritize access to care, and the people who don't have insurance are actually not doing too badly, and there's a lot of places for them to seek care. And for that reason, their understanding of having a good payer is different than our understanding of having a payer that we know will come through. So despite all that, we have persevered to try and estimate how many people have been enrolled. Our hope was to get actual enrollment data from the Medicaid office. That is incredibly hard in Colorado, probably hard in other places also. They are very protective of those claims. And for that reason, we have just used serial publications of monthly county-level Medicaid caseload data. One reason that's actually pretty good is because by its nature of collection, it controls for churn. In Denver and in Colorado, and this is state specific, your Medicaid eligibility is assessed on the last day of every month in arrears. And that is terrible for measurement. What that means is that you can go to the doctor with Medicaid and Medicaid pays your bill, and then on the 31st of the month, you report a little bit of income, and they actually say your Medicaid was not valid at that time. You were not eligible. And they backbill the hospital, and the hospital returns the money. And so for that reason, the data looks terrible. There are a number of policy reasons they choose to do that, but for me, it makes my job really hard. So for that reason, caseloads are kind of great. So what we do is we establish a baseline right there in January of 2014, or actually on the last day of 2013, and we say that is what we think was the pre-ACA coverage amount. That's the number of people that were supposed to be on Medicaid based on the old rules, which was pregnant women and adults without dependent children. There was a small lottery expansion of that several years ago. And then we say anything that increases past that is because of ACA. Now, that doesn't control for population growth. That doesn't control for moved or gone elsewhere or any strong shifts in the population demographics, but it's the best we've got right now. And so we just do this sort of subtraction, and now we're close to 107,000 for adults. You see that strong uptick right there. And we take the difference between the December 2013 number and the current number and say that is the enrolled based on ACA rules. One thing that is also probably pretty interesting that I should address is that we have a little bit of an increase among the child population, and this is what's known as the welcome mat effect. So when you find an adult who is eligible for Medicaid, they might not know that their kid is eligible too. So there has been a substantial uptick there that we, you know, we didn't even think we were going to get any kids.
Going backwards.
Oh, there we are. Okay, so in terms of estimating the remaining uninsured, this is what we're really focused on right now. And I kind of feel like we're a little bit stuck. We're getting ready to try a couple of things as soon as the ACS data for 2014 comes out, and that's supposed to be, I think, this fall. But one of the things we're considering is if we can get access to the enrollment data. We have been working on this for 18 months. We will take the 2013 estimates at the census tract or the county level on uninsured and then subtract out known enrollments that have valid coverage and say that that's been an increase. One of the challenges is that's just for Medicaid. So our exchange enrollment has been relatively modest but should be included. I want to say it's like 25 or 30,000 so far. However, our Colorado exchange did not collect previous insurance status. So that forces us to use a national estimate that 52% of exchange enrollees didn't have insurance before, which I just don't like it. I don't really want to do it. I think we're going to do it anyway, but there's a number of concerns about that. And we're trying to do the same thing at the census tract level. Another option is to take the hospital data, because a number of people who've gotten Medicaid were using our hospital and our safety net system for their uninsured care before. So we can actually validate their transition from self-pay onto Medicaid. And so that's what this math would look like. You'd take a census tract, have their census or their ACS population, maybe even the ESRI estimates if you wanted to, use their ACS uninsured estimate to impute a number, subtract out known enrollments that still have good coverage, and then have this new estimate on remaining uninsured. And our goal, I think, over the next 6 months or so is to produce an updated remaining uninsured map. Oh, really? It's 5 minutes. Okay. So the summary of the challenges are being insured and a coverage status is a completely evolving and dynamic state. I would liken it to up-to-date status for immunizations. And the way it's designed, measurement systems are designed right now, is really to take it as like a static thing. Like once you have diabetes, you're always going to have diabetes. Or once you have cancer, you're always going to have it. But the truth is, you should probably ask people this every day, because it could change a lot. Medicaid and exchange enrollment data is the ideal data source to do some of this monitoring in this map, but it is very challenging to procure, to normalize, to transform, and to visualize. It's very, very tricky. Retention of care, specifically churn, adds substantial complexity for our state. And measurement methods that reconcile all of that, rolling Medicaid enrollment, but open enrollment for exchange, and we've got churn, and then we've got people moving in and leaving the city and the state, really challenge traditional measurement approaches. But despite all of that, I can say that this is a picture from our Access to Care update that goes out to all of our community partners. That is a visualization of our very creative math. And you know, this is the most important thing that is actually happening with regards to access to care, because the truth is the difference between the uninsured counts and estimates at the neighborhood level and between different age groups and race groups is totally not important in this game. The thing that is important in this game is to say we are doing great and our enrollment efforts are working and we are enrolling people and they are getting into primary care. And I think the only people that really care about the difference between 94.4 and 94.2 are the people in this room. And so it's been really helpful for our director to really persist and say, I hear your concerns, but it's important for us to go ahead and get this message out to our community partners anyway. And you can write all the footnotes you want to make sure that, you know, you don't get sued for all the things that are wrong with these estimates, but that this is actually very valuable, and we're trying to share the trends, and we're not trying to share, you know, exact point estimates. So our conclusions are that community, clinical, and public health partners are really looking for the overall big picture. The precision of the estimates is not a concern to them. Census tract and neighborhood level maps were incredibly valuable and were used for targeted enrollment efforts that look to have worked. Target setting and benchmarking, even using estimates across data sources, was really useful to share messages of progress, and that creative methods to estimate have been greatly appreciated. Oh, that there was supposed to be a question slide there. Questions?
You know, in terms of bottom line thing, I'm one way, and I appreciate the heroic work you did in trying to come up with these. It doesn't entice me to want to go replicate it. But the bottom line is, like, when people come into the emergency room, the hospital, the ambulatory care, how many of those people are insured? I mean, uh-huh. You're measuring that, that event there. I mean, mm-hmm. Obviously, there could be people with no insurance who avoid care as a result. Once they get care, they start coming in, because that can skew things. But the more people come in and get care, and we have access to them, we know whether or not they have insurance at that point. That is a barometer of success of this program.
Yeah, we think we have. So if they are uninsured and they come to the Denver Health Emergency Room, a Medicaid enrollment person will come in and enroll them. And if they aren't eligible for Medicaid, they'll go on to CICP. Or they'll go into emergency Medicaid. I mean, like, they will not leave self-insured because the system refuses to incur that uncompensated expense. But we actually think, based on all these estimation methods, that we're closing in on 95%. So we have, you know, made dramatic progress.
Question for you?
Yeah.
So in Michigan, we have access to the Medicaid enrollment files, mm-hmm. and that churn is very interesting to look at in terms of who stays on and who goes off. Mm-hmm. But the reason why we're looking at it is our BCCP programs and also our Ryan White programs. You know, there's a whole group of people that they used to provide direct services to who now are eligible for a Healthy Michigan plan. Mm-hmm. And they're wanting to take on more of like a navigator role for those mm-hmm. folks. So they're trying to understand where within the community they should be targeting them. Mm-hmm. So sort of the inverse of that, have you thought about approaching some of the formerly direct service providers who, you know, their clients should be the ones who are being right. enrolled and see what's happening there?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because one of the most fascinating findings is that there are two clinics in the Denver area that are the remaining, they're funded by grants and donors, and they, you know, raise their hand and say, I just want to make sure everyone knows that if you don't have insurance, you can still come here, mm-hmm. and please continue to come here. And yeah, we've had a lot of interest. I mean, I think that Ryan White is trying hard not to pay any bill they don't want to bill, and they have tried to enroll everyone on Ryan White in Medicaid, mm-hmm. and I think a lot of them have been enrolled. So I think that's a good idea around that navigation role.
I was just trying to think of ways you could sort of validate, mm-hmm. for your own comfort.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then have you considered doing any, like when you're doing the census tracts, uh-huh. Looks, have you considered a small door-to-door kind of survey to validate?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I think that would be great. Ideally, that's what that CHAZ survey would do. And I know that they're conducting the 2015 survey right now, so hopefully we can get some more updated data. It's much more granular, and since it's locally administered, it's better suited for the communities. But I don't know. I'm always admirable of public health departments who get up and say, and we conduct our own survey, because that just seems so hard. Okay.
Any other
Thanks.
Questions for? Let's thank our speaker.